This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, we're going to take a look at something we haven't talked about for quite a while. It's something that I've been thinking about for several weeks here because of some questions that have come my way from a few different individuals. And the subject is, how is it that fundamentalist Latter-day Saints can claim to be an offshoot of the LDS Church and still do something that's contrary to the church's teachings? And that takes a little bit of explaining. Let me start off our discussion today by saying that I believe the logic and reasoning of these groups to be flawed. I'm sure I will now get numerous emails from many of them explaining why it's not, and that's fine. I'm happy to discuss this particular topic with anyone. It's a topic that in some ways makes me sad, because many of these individuals are good, well-meaning people, but they, in my opinion, are misguided in terms of the lifestyle that they are leaving. They believe it's authorized by God when, in fact, at the present time, I believe it certainly is not. Now, there are two fundamental documents, if you will, that form the basis for these fundamentalist LDS groups to believe that they are authorized by God to carry on a polygamy lifestyle today. The first one of these is a purported revelation received by President John Taylor. And it was discovered by his son, who was John W. Taylor, and who at the time was an apostle. And he used it in an attempt to justify the efforts that he had gone to further some plural marriages after the manifesto, for which he was excommunicated. It was a pretty serious offense. And the problem that I have with the position that he took is that even if this revelation, this 1886 revelation, were real, it was never accepted as binding upon the church. It was never sustained by the common consent of the church as required by Section 26. There was never any sustaining vote of the church to add it to the official revelations of the church. Further, the authorities of the church checked all of the church records and archives and were unable to find that revelation, meaning that they had some very strong suspicions that it was not genuine. But even if it was genuine, it was not binding on the church unless and until it was sustained by them and presented to them, which it never was. Then on to the second biggest document, which is relied upon by so-called fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, and that is the story of one individual by the name of Loren C. Woolley, who purported to have information from President John Taylor that God and Joseph Smith and the Savior who God had sent to see John Taylor had authorized some kind of underground polygamy movement. And I personally just don't believe that, for several different reasons. Now, I may get emails on that. That's fine. I'll toss out my email address right now. If you'd like to be in touch with me, send an email to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond to it. The problem that I have with the Lauren C. Woolley story, and there are several different accounts of it, but all of them are along the lines of this, that Lauren C. Woolley was at the home of his father, and that and the other interesting part is that there is quite a gap in this. The earliest known account that I'm aware of is 1912. This event purportedly happened in 1886. In the latter part of September of 1886, the exact day being unknown to anyone, Lauren Woolley supposedly was at the home of his father, John Woolley, in Centerville, Utah. And at that time, President Taylor was supposedly staying at that home as well. And that in the morning, after President Taylor had stayed overnight, he mentioned to those that he spoke with in the morning, within the sight and hearing of Lauren Woolley, that he had had a pleasant conversation all night with Joseph Smith. And in some accounts, President Taylor's countenance is beaming. He's lustrous. He is, his countenance shone. And the long and the short of the discussion is that President Taylor, according to this version of the Lauren Woolley story, was told by Joseph Smith not to abandon plural marriage no matter what, and that it was to be kept alive and underground and not in the open view of the church. Now, the problem that I have with that account is that even on its face, if we were to accept the exact statements that are in it as somehow not having been changed, and there are several accounts that differ quite greatly. And I've heard before, well, that's the same way as the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They're all different accounts. But the difference is that these are all from the same individual. And they are quite different, not just the way that Joseph Smith's accounts of the first vision differ, but in quite fundamental and different ways. But even if we were to accept that this was somehow a genuine account, it could not be observed because it violates the law of common consent. In section 26 of the Doctrine and Covenants, we find this statement that all things should be done by the common consent of the church. Now, when Latter-day Saints are in church or in a conference, whether a state conference or a general conference, they are asked to raise their hand as a sustaining vote. Many people find this boring or not of any significance because it's not a vote between different things. It's, will you sustain this? But they fail to realize the huge importance that that specific vote, that sustaining vote, has. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk for just a little bit about where this concept of common consent came from, because the context of where it came from is very, very significant, and it will show how vitally important this concept is and how the claims of fundamentalists violates this very, very important Law of Common Consent. Stay tuned. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. If you'd like to send me an email, you can ask a question, you can make a comment, suggestion, criticism, whatever you'd like. If you'd like to disagree with me, that's fine too. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond. Today we're talking about the underlying position that the so-called fundamentalist LDS people use to justify the practicing of polygamy today. They, generally speaking, base it on a purported 1886 revelation that John W. Taylor, who was the son of President John Taylor, and John W. Taylor, the son, at the time was an apostle, and he discovered after his father's death, according to his statements, a revelation that he claimed justified the continuation, even after the manifesto, of polygamy. And that's what he used to justify it when he was brought before the church. Now, the problem with his position is that even if that revelation from his father were true, and I have serious doubts about that, but even if it were true, it was superseded by the acts of later church authorities. If that revelation was in 1886 and the manifesto was 1890, the manifesto would trump or overcome the 1886 revelation. The other basic fundamental problem with this so-called revelation is also that, once again, it would violate the concept of common consent. This whole idea of common consent is very, very important. And when we took our break, I was going to bring up where this concept of common consent came from. Because if you understand where it came from, you understand how vitally important it is. What happened was that in 1830, a guy by the name of Hiram Page claimed to have received revelations for the direction of the entire church, even though he was not, of course, the president of the church. Joseph Smith was, and he was not a church leader, but he just claimed that he had revelation for the entire church. And there was huge confusion over this because the church had only started that year and people did not know what to do. Oliver Cowdery had confusion. Other members of the church did. They thought maybe Hiram Page had received some kind of revelation for the church itself. And so Joseph Smith, wishing to clarify the issue, inquired of the Lord. And what he received is now found in Doctrine and Covenants, section 20, verse 65, which says, quote, "No person is to be ordained to any office in this church where there is a regularly organized branch of the same without the vote of the church." And he also received another revelation that was received right at that time and that directly pertained to this, that said that all things in the church were to be done by common consent of the church members. That is also expressed again in D&C section 28, verse 13, again in section 107, and again in section 124. And of course, Hiram Page had never been ordained to any office, and had never been a person who was authorized by the common consent of the church to receive revelations for the church. And thereby it was found that his claim was not true. And that specific law can be stated as the idea or the concept that no one is going to receive revelation or inspiration for someone else's stewardship, for the stewardship of anyone else but their own. That will not happen. And if someone claims to have received such revelation or inspiration, they are either not truthful or have been deceived. That is why the common consent of the church at conferences and in ordinary ward meetings is so very, very important. Callings in the church are done in the open with the consent of the membership of the church. Now, when we bring that concept back to what has gone on within the fundamentalist LDS communities, you find that they have a huge problem because they are claiming church authorization for something that was purportedly supposed to be done without the common consent of the church and not even disclosed to the church. In other words, the authority for what they're doing is supposedly secret or done without open consent in any way. That concept is to me completely unbelievable. It's not something that Joseph Smith would have received as a revelation in 1830 in connection with Hiram Page, and then turned around and disavowed or just ignored completely, appearing to John Taylor supposedly in 1886. That is why I don't believe the fundamental, excuse the pun here, the fundamental nature of the story itself. It just does not add up. And so when you have fundamentalist Latter-day Saints who claim to be receiving some kind of revelation or some kind of basis for what they're doing, according ultimately to the Lawrence C. Woolley story, that is the underlying issue. And it mushrooms from there, because if you were to believe their story, then what happens is not only do you have a practice continuing, but you have individuals being ordained to carry this on and that on, all underground, all supposedly authorized by the church, but in fact, never with the common consent of the church. And I don't believe that's actually possible. So, where do we go from there? Well, this Lauren Woolley was a fascinating character, a very interesting individual. He claimed to have been a bodyguard for John Taylor for some time, although there are no records that he actually was. Later on, he was excommunicated from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That happened in January of 1924, and it happened because he was charged with falsehood. He had claimed that general authorities had continued to practice polygamy, and that accusation, the specifics of it, was denied openly in conference by the president of the church. So one thing done in the open, other things supposedly done in secret. I hope that sheds a little bit of light on the false notion that the fundamentalist people act with authority. Join me next week. I'm Martin Tanner.